It's time to get organized with Dr. Craig and Citizen Action. Working for democracy and taking on economic, racial, and environmental issues across Wisconsin and around the United States, here's Earl Ingram with Dr. Robert Craig.
Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. The one and only Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, is back on the docket. Good morning to you, Dr. Craig. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, Earl. How are you doing?
I don't know, Dr. Craig. I wish I could be you. Because the more I see these things happening, the more disgusted and frustrated I become, because, you know how to handle it. You put it into proper perspective. You don't seem to get shook over any of these things, outlandish things that we keep hearing more and more. And Dr. Craig, all I can do is think 3 years from now, how do we survive it? I don't know, Dr. Craig, how do we, as the American people, as we watch the nation being turned inside out and upside down, how do we survive this?
Well, we're at a place where there's the greatest threat to American democracy since the Civil War. And so the question is whether it could be preserved or not. We have a leader with authoritarian instincts who's a would-be authoritarian, probably driving toward some sort of hybrid, what political scientists call an electoral autocracy, where there seem to be elections, people seem to have some rights, but only one party can rule, where everything is rigged, which is what Viktor Orban's Hungary looks like. And you see when President Trump is embattled, he lashes out in authoritarian ways, hoping that would build up support, and then follows through on a lot of it. What's happening right now in Charlotte, North Carolina, which was happening in Chicago, that's real. That's just not threats, right? They're going and rounding folks up. The opinion polls are terrible for him, but of course, if you can succeed in an authoritarian takeover, it doesn't matter what the opinion polls say, right? That's the whole point of moving away from a democracy. So, hard to tell. The craziest thing in the last couple days, and part of Trump's power is his ability to claim our attention constantly. He needs to distract from the Epstein files, which has gone very badly for him. It's been mishandled by him terribly in his administration, that he has the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia up, who our own CIA determined ordered the killing of an American citizen, an American journalist, formerly an emigre from Saudi Arabia, and brought him to the White House. And then they had open questions from reporters, and a reporter from ABC News asked legitimate questions, and Trump lashed out, and now he's demanding that ABC have its license revoked. He doesn't have the power to do that just as president, but he has taken over the executive agencies where he has his cronies in charge. Who knows if the Federal Communication Commission, FCC, and the hack he has over there is going to try to find some grounds. He didn't name any. He doesn't know any. He doesn't know the law at all, but that's not the point. He's acting the part of the strong man. And as long as we have, it's a good sign there are reporters still asking questions that might get them in trouble, because a lot of big corporate media has been ducking. We've seen settlements with Donald Trump for frivolous lawsuits from CBS, for example, hoping to get a merger approved by the FCC. We saw ABC cancel Jimmy Kimmel until there was enough public outrage that the cost of doing it was higher than was too high for them, and then they reversed course.
You know, Dr. Craig, you talked about the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, who basically had been ostracized, not just in our nation, but across the planet after the assassination of Khashoggi. And yet Donald Trump brought him in with red carpet, bands, pomp, and all those things that they would bring, you know, an ally. They don't do that for allies. And yet when you realize that he's doing this because his sons have been doing business, he's getting ready to build a couple Trump towers. And so he's saying, well, he's investing $1 trillion in our nation. He independently is controlling and calling the shots on almost all these things, Dr. Craig, and we watch it. And I know you always continue to be composed. Man, I want to holler at the top of my lungs about what I'm seeing. And I just don't know, Dr. Craig, maybe I should, you know, temper, you know, my thoughts. But you and I have lived a long time. We've never seen anything like it.
No, you're right not to lose our sense of the incredible and the unbelievable here, right? To keep our sense of outrage. Oops, hold on. There's a member meeting starting in that
close. Okay. All right. And so
I think you're right, Earl, but I also think we need to keep an eye on the ball and realize these are now predictable behaviors on the part of would-be authoritarianism, and do what it's necessary to defeat him and to save democracy. But I think if we lose our sense of outrage, because this stuff's all unprecedented, then we are lost. We can't, as the common term now goes, normalize all of this.
Well, you know, Dr. Craig, there is some hope when you look and see what the decision that was made on a congressional map in Texas, right? You see maybe some inkling of hope when you look at something like that, and that maybe there is some hope. But, you know, you have to look on the fringes for these things. I mean, the American people are struggling economically. Donald Trump and the Republicans keep saying this is Joe Biden's economy. Joe Biden this, Joe Biden that, Joe Biden. This is the reason why inflation is so high. Joe Biden. You know, nobody else could get away with blaming the president before them, Dr. Craig. And if they would have mentioned it once or twice, they would have been kind of slapped a little bit. Donald Trump and the Republicans say it every day. We're in this condition because of Joe Biden and the Democrats. And yet, where they should be held accountable, and maybe I'm, again, putting the cart before the horse, Dr. Craig, the election, the results of the election a couple of weeks ago, probably is leading us to realize that something is really happening, right?
Well, in any previous administration, in their second term, right, that suffered this big a rebuke and is in this bad a shape in terms of opinion polling, the top issues for people are affordability and the economy, and Trump has terrible numbers on them. He doesn't even popular immigration policy, because he and they all lied and said we're only picking up dangerous criminals, rapists, and murderers. You know what? They've always been picked up if you knew such. That was a lie. They were going to go and separate families and take away dad and mom and grandma and you know, and their uncles who had lived in the country for years and have many family members and their immediate family and extended families that are American citizens, that are hardworking parts of communities. And that's been very unpopular. Do it with masked men, right? With they don't follow basic rules and norms that tear gas and shoot pepper balls right. at ministers, right? And just unbelievable stuff. By the way, ICE and Border Patrol have been that way all along. It's now well before Trump. Now what they're like, how thuggish and authoritarian they are, is now much more public, and it's been out in the open because the whole city of Chicago just experienced it, and now they seem to, Earl, it just started to get cold, so now they're going to winter in the South.
So yeah.
They head to Charlotte, then they'll come back. So they're snowbirds, it turns out. In a normal situation, they would lose Congress in the midterms, and maybe they still will, because we're in this weird in-between situation where we have some of the norms of some democratic mechanisms and some that have been destroyed. And so we still have some courts functioning, right? We still have elections. I do think if this continues the way it is, and his polling numbers are terrible, that he will try to find a way to steal the 2026 election, and we need to try to be very prepared for what that might be. It might not be anything we've seen before. I think there are a lot of theories we could talk about. But we want to use this election, but we can't assume that elections necessarily go as predicted, and we may need to have a large number of mass turnout on the streets to block him if he tries to steal the 2026 election. The court decision on gerrymandering, that's been one of his methods to try to steal Congress. That's good at the district court level. We've had that at the federal district court and appellate court level a lot in this administration. But we have a packed Supreme Court that doesn't represent the people, that's a MAGA majority because they stole two seats and because there was a disproportionate number of Republicans appointed over the years just by waste on when the appointments were available and who was president. They have backed him up and found ways either to support what he's doing or to procedurally allow him to keep doing it. I mean, we still have birthright citizenship executive order on the books, Earl. That came out right after his inauguration. It's a flatly unconstitutional violation of the Fourth Amendment. The Supreme Court has still managed not even to discuss it. Tariffs are only beginning to work on. We've had these illegal tariffs for some time. So I'm not convinced, Earl, that the Supreme Court won't step in and say, oh, no, Texas has a perfect right to gerrymander the maps. What's interesting in the media reporting on it, the Real News reporting, is how terribly argued the case was and how terrible the legal memos are, that the Trump Department of Justice isn't even competent to try to write their position in a clear memo. Apparently, it's full of typos and legal mistakes and was basically laughed out at court at the federal district court level. But I doubt that matters too much to Clarence Thomas and the like, and Samuel Alito.
You know, Dr. Craig, it's just one thing after another. Former Supreme Court candidate Brad Schimmel appointed U.S. Attorney for Eastern District. I mean, it's things, Dr. Craig, you can never even breathe a sigh of relief before you're hit with something else that just is as partisan as it gets. And again, I know that I should, you know, I need...
The last time we saw him, Earl, he had the world's richest man with a cheese head running around screaming like a crazy man on a stage, which doesn't go very well. He's not actually appointed U.S. attorney because that would require confirmation, require both U.S. senators.
Well, interim. He's the interim guy.
It's interim, so the president could just do it. So now he's going to run everything interim whenever he wants to get around any senators that might block it. And there's one that would block it, Tammy Baldwin. Ron Johnson is up for anything. He's up for the ride.
So how long can the interim title last? Is there no history of this?
I think I'm not sure. It might only be a year, but then again, the fact that there's a law and a norm is relevant. The question is, how quickly can you force them to do otherwise, right? So I wouldn't want to assume that there is any limitation, but I've not read into what the previous standard is. Some of his prosecutions are in jeopardy, the political ones, like the James Comey one, because he violated all the appointment processes, right, for the people who then were willing to go and indict him. And it looks like in the Comey case that the grand jury was illegally misled by the crony, the former personal lawyer that he installed to indict Comey, Mr. Comey.
You know, Dr. Craig, when you speak with your contemporaries across the nation and about these kinds of things, and you guys are having these dialogues and conversations, are your contemporaries kind of responding the same way you are with, the sky might be falling, but, you know, we can't just assume that it hasn't already fallen totally, but, you know, there's a way to prop it up. I mean, how do you just, you know, keep the faith?
Well, the civil society groups and organizing groups, social justice arena, are planning a new playbook, what you need to do, what we've learned from around the world, what kind of peaceful, nonviolent movement, non-cooperation movement will block authoritarianism. And so I was in Chicago this weekend for a full day of training. I've been to several of these. And then we launched a campaign in Chicago. AT&T, it turns out, who a lot of people buy their cell phones from or buy their internet service from, right, and their TV.
Right.
That there, it turns out, they're the data provider for ICE. So when ICE is swarming in and kidnapping a father from his family, you know, at his workplace, they're using AT&T to identify where they're going and to geolocate. And so there were protests at 18 AT&T locations in Chicago on Sunday, demanding they drop the ICE contract and urging people not to buy new AT&T products for the holidays, right? Not to go and buy that new smartphone for your kids and all of that, because these big Fortune 500 companies that sell consumer goods, they make a lot of big money in the holidays. So they're vulnerable at this time. So that is an example of raising the price to AT&T so that they stop cooperating, in the same way that the price was raised for ABC, so they had to reinstate Jimmy Kimmel because so many people canceled their Hulu TV, their Disney Plus subscriptions, etc., etc.
You know, Dr. Craig, if I told you how many people that I interact with who have basically dropped out of this, they don't want to hear anymore, they can't take it, they can't stand it, they can't even watch the news anymore. And I'm talking about people who are normally been engaged in things. And I know that that's not the proper way to handle it, but they just feel defeated. And you know, when you look again, especially with what transpired with the Crown Prince, when you read and find out how much money the Trump family is making in Saudi Arabia with the business deals, from his son-in-law to his sons. I read something the other day, you know, prior to Donald Trump becoming the president of the United States the first time, there was conjecture about whether or not he was in fact a billionaire. Now there's no question. Anywhere between $5.5 to $7.5 billion. And so he's been able to profit from the presidency of the United States when the Emoluments Clause, every other president had to live by that. These are the kinds of things, Dr. Craig, that I think really is just outlandish. And
it seems like the authoritarian strongmen they all get rich and loot their countries. So this is the same model. there needs to be more outrage about it. I'd say about the people you know who used to be active, who have disengaged. I hope some of them come back, but I will say this. The positive, optimistic thing is the political science research about nonviolent resistance movements. And the nonviolent ones are much more successful than the violent ones. I want everyone to understand. So there's both a moral issue and there's a pragmatic issue there. They only need 3.5% of the population very active in order to take down any authoritarian regime. In fact, no regime has stood up to 3.5% of its population being organized and active. So we won't get everyone, Earl, but I do think some people who have pulled out, once this gets momentum, will be inspired to come back in. But I'm saying that if we're never going to get everyone, nor do we need them, actually. And so we should be worrying about people who are I'm more worried with people who are following this closely, commenting on social media, watching cable news, and are outraged by it and aren't doing anything other than that. Those are the people who ought to be getting active, right, and actually doing something effective, because watching and being outraged is not enough. And I know we're all, not only are you involved, you're also trying to inspire others. So that was not a critique of you, but I a lot of people who are only consuming media, social media, and other kinds of traditional media, and not involved in any way. We need more of those people off the sidelines, because unlike football games where we can't really help the Packers win the game, politics, the spectator sport, you actually can. And if you don't get off the sidelines, the good guys won't win.
You know, Dr. Craig, you just realized there's this talk now again about, you know, Donald Trump is going to give the American people a $2,000 stimulus check. And so, I mean, the $2,000 check, if the people who struggle and they receive that $2,000, Dr. Craig, it would be a lifeline, and, you know, for a split second. But with a nation that's in as much debt as we're in the long run, it's even more damage to those of us who struggle on a daily basis. You may get $2,000 this one time around, but the added debt that goes along with it long term is going to be even more stifling. Is it safe to say that?
Well, at a corruption level, it means he thinks he can just bribe the American people with relatively very little money compared to what the Trump family is skimming off,
right?
And what all of his closest allies that are close, the billionaires, are skimming off. The University of California, Berkeley economist just came out with a report that said that the richest Americans have a dramatically lower effective tax rate, that is what they actually pay, than working class and middle class people now, and that's been getting worse, and the Trump tax bill makes it worse. He didn't do anything about the deficit. The big ugly bill actually dramatically spikes the deficit and will cause Medicare cuts, because they're automatic Medicare cuts if you reach a certain deficit level that are in law. And their justification for brutal cuts to Medicaid, you know, which is a basic necessity, and brutal cuts to the Affordable Care Act, the big subsidies fight we just had, and to food shares, which they cruelly tried, Donald Trump tried to withhold as political leverage during the recent shutdown. None of those were necessary if you didn't have to give Elon Musk and everyone else and the biggest corporations in America, including ones that are profiting off of the Trump regime, like AT&T, massive tax cuts. Now, AT&T got $8 billion in the big ugly bill and supported it and lobbied for it, because they just want their $8 billion. So when you next time you think about whether you should buy a new AT&T products, remember what side they're on right now. But I don't know if it would show. I mean, if he can pass that through a Republican Congress that claims that there's a deficit problem, as they don't act like it, but that's why they have to do what they're doing to people's health care and their food security, right? Maybe that is possible, because they are so afraid for themselves that they'll do anything he demands. But his opinion polling is so low, you're beginning to see fissures, right? He had to reverse himself and claim he wants to release the Epstein files because his own Republicans were going to put it on his desk to release the Epstein files. Of course, we know what the next authoritarian move is. Scrub them and don't send out anything that could implicate dear leader. Right. Earl, do you think we're going to get
No.
out of Pam Bondi's Department of Justice?
You know, Dr. Craig, you look at all these things in totality, and you're right about them throwing things up against the wall, and you just see all these different things moving a flotilla over in, why am I forgetting the nation, where all the ships are?
Venezuela.
Yeah. And so the amount of money, Dr. Craig, that it costs to move 20,000 troops and those and the contingent of ships that go along with Gerald Ford to move them halfway around the world and have them sit there. And yet, you know, people continue to struggle in this nation for half of what he spent there. You could feed the American people, those on food stamps. To now turn around, Dr. Craig, and say anybody who's receiving SNAP benefits now has to reapply because we feel like dead people. They played this song before, Dr. Craig, right? Dead people are voting. But now dead people are receiving, you know, SNAP benefits. So everybody has to now. I mean, it's just over and over and over. And I know I feel bad from coming here and saying this, but people that I know who have really been in the fight, Dr. Craig, for a long time. And that's kind of what's frustrating to me. I'm telling them, just like you just said, well, the Democrats are falling apart. And okay, so if you say the Democrats are falling apart, the Democrats are going through a transformation. Is it time? Yeah, I think it is time. But I don't think you just throw everybody out, Dr. Craig, and just bring in all young voices. And, you know, experience does have its place, Dr. Craig. But your thoughts on the Democratic Party today? Because that's another big issue.
I mean, it's not the old party where there's a smoke-filled room, right?
Yes, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
So people kind of assume there's a direction more than there is. There's a lot of candidates who are their own entrepreneurs who have gotten themselves in office, and they're advised by, there's a whole industry that advises them and runs their campaigns and does their polling and does their ad buying, and they have a lot of biases about how campaigns should be run and what positions you should take that are effective, often wrong, because they've advised a lot of the various campaigns we've seen over the last few years that have failed miserably, but those same consultants get hired over and over again. Right now, I'd say the party is in tension, right, where there's a wing of the party that is trying to actually be a fighting party, which is what the Democratic public is demanding, actually achieve things for people. And there's one that wants to keep playing the same old rules. And people are fed up with the way things have been and the establishment. And so if you are the status quo party that's going to restore things to how great they were before Trump, people didn't think it was that great, okay? And so there was an attempt to say there was a lot of unity in those elections last week, where there were sweeps in Virginia and New Jersey and in New York City, saying that Zohra Mamdani in New York ran on affordability, and so did the very moderate neoliberal candidates for governor in Virginia and New Jersey. Now, they all said they were affecting affordability. My question is, do the other two, the two candidates that won for governor, is that just a talking point for them, or do they have real plans that would do it? Because if they don't, out, then there's going to be more public disappointment that it didn't happen and more of a rebellion against Democrats. So the threat to democracy is at two dimensions, two levels. We have to always remember both. One is the attack on its mechanisms, like the right to vote, right? And the courts and all of that. And the other dimension is people are walking away from it because it doesn't deliver for average people, because it doesn't improve their lives, doesn't improve the opportunity in their communities, see their communities decaying and falling apart, and young people having not having the same economic prospects that their parents had. And you have to start changing that. Healthcare is unaffordable. Childcare is unaffordable. Groceries are unaffordable. On and on, are you going to tangibly not only run on that, but then do something about it? And what that makes you do is take on a lot of the greedy special interests that are making it happen. Why are energy costs skyrocketing? Because big utilities that have a monopoly want to build lots of new things to make more money and raise their stock prices. And because the data companies are trying to take us to the cleaners by this rush for massive new data centers, right? So you have to take on those interests. Healthcare, you have to take on the hospitals, the big monopolies, the insurance companies, and big pharma. It isn't a little policy thing where I have a tweak. It's about whether we're going to have an affordable society in which the economy is not rigged against average people. The minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour in Wisconsin, Earl. So we're part of a push in the organization. I'm in Cincinnati, Wisconsin, for a $20 minimum wage. And you know where it is? Some Democrats, because they hope to have a majority, a governorship, and the legislature in 2027. Some are all for it right away. Some of them, I don't know. That might be edgy. So we're having a lot of conversations. We're trying to push them with grassroots power to support what would actually do life much affordable if people made a living wage, right? That's part of it. It's not just how much things cost, it's how little people make and how much their wages have stagnated.
So Dr. Craig, greedy special interests are on both sides of the ledger. And so are we now looking at a window, possibly, Dr. Craig, where a third party can at least, maybe people can give it a thought? I mean, are we coming to a point now where it's not such a far-fetched idea?
I don't think it's the way things will go in the United States.
Okay. Because not ever?
We have a structure right now that is a mandated two-party system for a lot of reasons, but the parties themselves are subject to being taken over. Republican Party got taken over by MAGA, by the far right, and by Christian nationalists. And their problem right now is they have an overtly Nazi wing that is gaining momentum, especially for young people, led by Nick Fuentes. The great reform eras that we've had, the progressive era, for example, in the early 20th century, the New Deal, that was about progressives taking over an existing party, or in the progressive era case, part of both parties. And so I think it's that the Democratic Party is the only vehicle for this, but the Democratic Party itself needs to be purified in the same way the Republican Party was, but for the right, for actually representing people in a populist, progressive sort of way, and that's the best mechanism. And it's the same thing. If the Democratic Party becomes a true party of reform and achieving things for average people, it will become popular again like it was in the 1930s and 1940s under FDR.
Yeah, but Dr. Craig, you talked about if the Democratic Party somehow gets religion and starts doing the things that, you know, they had been known for, and that's fighting for the average American person. You know, again, many, many of the Democratic leaders suffer from the same thing the Republicans do, loving to remain in office and big business and big donors. calling the shots, and they can't, because they want to remain in office, Dr. Craig, and they love that. They you know, you get stuck between whether or not the people who are going to donate the money to you to keep you in office, or the people who vote for you to keep you in office, and they're caught between a hard place and a rock. So who are they going to support? Because the average American struggling right now can't afford to put money in campaigns, Dr. Craig. So, you know.
Well, but they can vote and they can volunteer.
Okay.
And they can do small donations. So what's happening right now is this is election by election, right? It's not a matter of a decision being made what the direction of the Democratic Party is. It's what's the composition of its elected officials.
Okay.
And for the state legislature in Wisconsin and in U.S. Senate congressional races, there are primaries with populist progressive candidates against establishment candidates. And so the biggest thing people can do is to be involved in those races and be on the right side. And what we have found is if you can recruit and develop good populist progressive candidates, they tend to win these primaries. So the main Senate race is a case in point right now. By the way, the Wisconsin governor's race is going to be a big test of which wing of the party is in control. And I'm not going to say one candidate is definitely one or the other. Candidates can move, but they have to embrace that, right? In other words, candidates change over time because elected officials tend to respond to public opinions and public incentives. But in Maine, you have a populist progressive candidate, former Marine oyster fisherman, Graham Plattner, who has raised a ton of small donations because he's an exciting populist candidate for Medicare for All, as for everything I just described. But Chuck Schumer and the Senate leadership didn't like him very, very much. And so they've put into the race a 77-year-old governor, Janet Mills, who reads talking points. I mean, she is incredibly unexciting. And you know what? She's running 20 points behind Plattner. So if Plattner can win that and then defeat Susan Collins, also a fossil in many ways, the supposedly moderate who always votes with Trump, Republican senator from Maine, then Plattner adds to the other progressives changing the composition of the U.S. Senate, joining people like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Chris Murphy, a number of the Tammy Baldwin, the more progressive people in the U.S. Senate.
So Dr. Craig, in keeping with this gubernatorial race in the state of Wisconsin, the battle lines are being drawn already inside of the Democratic Party. And it's going to be ugly. And there are going to be a lot of people wounded. Do you think that they'll be able to overcome that, come back together in order to possibly retain the Democrats, retain the gubernatorial seat? Because it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, I think so. I don't. What we're seeing now, it doesn't seem like there's not a Republican candidate who looks impossible to beat on the other side, right? You're not looking at a Tommy Thompson kind of figure that was a very effective politician, and not even looking at a Scott Walker level talent from what I'm seeing.
For the ones that are running now,
but there is a
possibility they're trying to recruit others to come in,
right,
and run.
So, I mean, at this moment, but I would just say that primaries are healthy to the extent that it produces a strong candidate. So I hope a candidate comes through that ran on something and won the primary based on what they ran on, rather than what negative stuff they were able to come up with against opponents, right? Though that'll be a part of it. But it certainly, I don't think it hurt Zoran Mondami very much at all the horrendous things that Andrew Cuomo and his side said about it.
Yeah, right? But Cuomo ran as an independent, not as a Democrat.
Well, he first ran as a Democrat,
oh, yeah,
lost the primary, he then ran as an independent,
right,
Trump support, and then also got Eric Adams to support him, the
right,
disgraced current mayor who cut a deal with Trump to stay out of jail. So the point being that I think it'll be water rolling off a duck if that candidate actually is exciting and actually connected with voters in some way on a very positive agenda on education, on health care, on child care, on actually being serious about environmental issues like the climate crisis and the cost of energy, for example. I think they can certainly overcome it. At this point, the front runner for the Republicans is Tom Tiffany, who seems kind of like a, you know, kind of a pseudo Trump,
yes,
Trump without the charisma.
You know, Dr. Craig, I've been, you know, as I've been kind of analyzing the people running here for the Democratic nomination, I would say that for the first time in a long time, these are all young people, for the most part. And we've seen Governor Evers, the two terms with Governor Evers, and to be honest with you, I grew a little tired of watching Governor Evers. Not that, you know, his energy level or the fact that you just know that we need somebody stronger, right? And so I don't think that whoever comes out on top on the Democratic side of things could really be, I hate to use the term, any worse than Governor Evers.
And it's not all age. Bernie Sanders is in his 80s.
No, right,
still energetic,
right,
and ambitious, right?
Yeah.
And they're sleepy 25-year-olds, you know, who don't have any
right,
ambition,
right,
low
right,
energy. So, I think it isn't just, you know, how Tony Evers presented. That reflected also the lack of ambition of his administration. I mean, can you name one major significant reform initiative from this administration, what the legacy of it is, other than I vetoed some really bad stuff? And so there's a lack of ambition there, and that could happen. You could elect the 35-year-old who lacked ambition. So this is really about, we need leaders willing to fight with energy. I will say this, I was pleasantly surprised. You should always say good things about people when it's due, right? When he went, and once you had the court decision, it was right before it got reversed by the Supreme Court to release the food shares money.
Right.
The Evers administration just paid it, and then Trump was claiming that they were going to claw it all back and making threats, and he stood firm. That was the kind of leadership I wish we had seen more from him. So he did get the stakes that people are 2 weeks late on their food aid, and they depend on it and need it, and kids are going hungry, and took a risk and just proceeded immediately once he had the right court decision, and did not reverse himself when the Supreme Court jumped in.
Well, you know, Dr. Craig, it was easier to do that knowing he's not running again.
Yeah, maybe lame duck. I'd like to see some more. If that's true, it'd be good if the next a little over a year, that he's bold in other ways. But he's been shockingly unbold when it comes to the huge cuts to Medicaid that are coming, where they're putting all these administrative barriers in. His position, the position of his health services secretary, is they haven't been given a mighty implement. There's nothing they can do to improve the system and prevent people from falling off health care. In fact, they no longer have the capacity to expand Badger care. That's just that lack of ambition. Your governor, find the resources, reassign resources in the department. You need to improve the enrollment system and the IT system to a point where as few people as possible are thrown off their health care for administrative barriers that are relevant to their eligibility. Other states are doing that, but his administration, he himself, has shown no ambition there. So that's been more the tendency of the administration. But hopefully his fighting on food shares, maybe he can pick some more fights, because you're right, he's not going to be on the ballot again.
You know, Dr. Craig, for all the reasons in the world, And I know Citizen Action and others who've been fighting for Badger Care and for a long, long time. And just by the way things look right now as it relates to health care, so many people are going to be suffering because health care, just from the perspective that I'm seeing it right now, the pain is going to be meted out. Is there any way, Dr. Craig, that you see that this can be minimalized at all? Or are people just going to have to suffer through this pain?
States can do a lot. So I mentioned before, states can improve their IT and administrative enrollment systems for Medicaid so that it's as seamless as possible. So people can, they're going to make you reapply a bunch of times, make that possible on your phone, right? Where you just click a few boxes. You have to prove your employer that you have an employer and that you have the documentation they require for your employment. And most people on Medicaid do work. They're going to fall off because they can't get exactly the right certification into a clunky system online. Make that easy, right? That would reduce the damage. The other thing you can do is the state can have its own proactive healthcare agenda that improves things dramatically. So what we are working on at Citizen Action in Wisconsin, we work a lot on healthcare, is we are working on bills with legislators that would greatly improve healthcare access and reduce costs in this state. And the point is to build up as much support in the current legislative session before the election, and then get candidates, including the candidates for governor, to run on these policies. So that we've been setting up and working on that for some time. There are major bills being drafted. It will be announced early next year. So our members across the state, we have a lot of activists who come out of healthcare, a lot of not only patients, but doctors and nurses, other health professionals, is to get this on the agenda because, you know, all the pundits now say healthcare is the top issue because of the massive cuts that the Trump regime has done. Well, now we have to turn that into public support for a positive agenda and candidates running on that agenda and then actually achieving it. Because what rebuilds democracy is democracy delivering for people. Then people will vote and more because they have faith in their democracy. They don't have it right now because they haven't seen it deliver goods for them at all or improve their lives or the prosperity of their communities.
So Dr. Craig, do you think that with the spring elections, that I know there's a lot of talk about whether or not Democrats can take back control. What are your thoughts about that? Is it possible? And if it does come to fruition, would that help more in the fight for the health care issue in the state of Wisconsin?
We haven't had democracy in Wisconsin because the gerrymandered legislature guaranteed that only one party could control the legislature, and the legislature is the lawmaking body. A governor can't make laws on their own. Now, that used to be true for the presidency, but now, of course, we have a president being allowed to make laws on his own, like closing down the Department of Education without any congressional action, right? So the only way we get a proactive healthcare agenda that reduces the skyrocketing cost of healthcare. You know, our hospital prices are the highest in the Midwest and the fifth highest in the country, and it's because the hospital chains have become giant consolidated monopolies. That's the main driver. We can take action on all that, but we need the governor and we need the legislature. And even then, it's going to be a fight because those interests, hospitals, insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies aren't going down lightly. They have lots of lobbyists and they'll hire lots more. But at least if we had the legislature change hands, we'd have a fighting chance if enough people got involved and mobilized, which is what we're working towards.
You know, Dr. Craig, and with that, I kind of think it's important that I start focusing on those races and having those candidates on. Because, you know, I mean, where else? It's not, people sometimes look at the legislature and they think, well, I don't know those people. I don't know what they do. They're not changing things in any special way. But they do represent the power to make the changes necessary in our lives. Safe to say that?
Yes. And I think also listen to what they offer. And politician is a certain kind of, I mean, all of them try to be liked, right? It's a, right. It's a profession where you try to be, to try to build bridges and be liked. So if you tell them what you're interested in, they'll generally at some level try to indicate they have the same interest, right?
Right.
What's interesting to do sometimes, this is more of an organizer stance, is to listen to what they offer you and see if whether that's the right things to being offered and whether they're actually saying things or whether instead they're just having glittering generalities. You know, everyone believes in baseball, apple pie, you know, beautiful Thanksgiving turkey. That, they're not saying anything, right? So yes. What are they saying that someone might disagree with? If you negated the statement, there'd be a bunch of people who would agree with that negative statement. And so I've talked at length for, you know, in the range of an hour to five of the candidates for governor. So we have endorsement process, we have members across state, so I get a call. I've tried really hard to be the organizer and see what they offer me, because if I offer them too much, they will adapt in the conversation and try to offer it, right? Even the people who absolutely are committed, I'm not saying this is a critique of this is just, you know, it's the right. job description in many ways. So you want to try to see what they're going to volunteer. So I have my own, it's not our endorsement process will involve our members and our board, but I have my, in round one, which ones offered me a better case than the others, but they don't know which, they actually wouldn't know who that is because I didn't tell them. I want to see what they think they're running on, what they're going to focus on. There'll be a later stage to try to get them to focus on things if we think there are gaps.
Hey, Dr. Craig, we've got to leave it there. Thank you as always, my friend. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate you, Earl.
All right. Talk to you later.